They were only mentioned the whites, not the
yes, white. No. That's right.
Well, I stole today.
It's still so.
Just about it. Talking about that Kimberley Conference where the TLSA was taken over by the radical wing. Do you remember that conference? When the TLSA was taken over
by the radical wing.
Do you remember the chaos which was present at that meeting?
Kimberley Conference?
Yeah, or whatever conference. I think it was 43 conference when Benny Keyes and others sort of wrecked the conference.
When the thing was split, you know, and the radicals took over.
I don't remember.
Maybe you remember in the end, they had to go to court to decide who was the rightful president.
Woodstock. Oh, it's the Woodstock Conference.
Yeah.
At the year council. Yeah, that was the time when I think Golding was in the chair.
Yeah, yeah.
Golding.
And Golding was thrown off the platform and marched out of the wall.
We paid £3,000 for the right to call Golding a quisling.
Yeah, he brought a case against Benny Keyes.
He settled the matter in court.
Settled the matter in court.
And he was thrown out, I think. He wouldn't allow us to call a conference. He had one official, I don't know who the official was, and he was able to call the conference and force Golding and the other officials to attend. And at that conference, I think a resolution was made to oust them from their positions and so on and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. And a new constitution was proposed. And so they lost there, you see. They didn't want to call a conference, but we forced them to call a conference because one official was on our side and he was able to call a conference according to the constitution. And so a conference was called in which a motion was that they were deposed from their position and that a new constitution, and when that resolution was passed, by overwhelming majority as usual, which we had rigged. which we had rigged, we had gained support and our supporters came.
So
that was the end of Mr. Golding and the gang of, there was a, who was that fellow? Oh, they were all principals of schools, you know, and so on.
And the principal at your school, was he?
Adams.
Oh, was a poor little fellow. He was just, he didn't even attend conference. He didn't know anything about the conference.
So but, you...
shall we? I've got to run.
Okay,
fine. You've got to get to work, man. And you have had nothing to eat.
The only copies we have. We never part with them, otherwise we are. So, please look after them and give them back. Photo start them and give them back. We can't be without.
Are they the accusation and...
This was the accusation that was...
This is the accusation.
Right.
You see?
I think the safest thing is I'll try to do it just now.
Yeah. We'll be glad if you can do this just now
and drop it immediately
and bring it back.
Yeah. Hmm?
That's what our.
That's for our files. That's for the next generation.
Yeah. You should protect it because it will be useful, historical, and...
It's been guarded with our lives, as it were.
Mm. Yeah.
What we say?
7 7 6 8 this was issued by the Secretary of the Convention Committee.
Java Street.
Yeah. Oh. And this was the committee in Cape Town that answered. Not the main body, because this was not written by the Anticat either. Even though you see the names there, it was a ploy. That was the TLSA running away now, complete. As I say to you, at the 1976 outburst by the youth, you remember?
Yeah, but in 1976.
The outburst of the youth.
Yeah,
youngsters.
Yeah.
I said to you, that should have come
in your time.
In our time.
Oh, the death of Mr. Ono.
Because it was coming, and they saw it coming. But they ran away. The petty bourgeois ran away. And the petty bourgeois will always run away. That is a fact.
So the personal contacts and everything.
Pardon?
Personal contact also stopped between the two groupings. We had no contact after that.
No.
The ones stood next to each other.
No. You see, we were too carting so terribly seriously. But it was no joke with us.
Do we want to go into the history of the split?
Yeah, just a short background on the split.
Hmm?
Do you want to give us a short background on the split?
You want to?
The split in the TLS, in the unity movement, the TLSA breaking out away.
Do you want to give a short account of it?
No. You want us to do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I see.
It's there.
It's there, you read it.
Fine.
You read it and then you can ask your question or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
The summit. Was he a teacher?
He was a teacher at the school, at Golding School, yes. And he became the principal after Golding's death, I should imagine.
What type of man was Golding?
Golding? You know that I didn't have much to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a very nice man as a principal, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Very good. What I can remember.
Uh-huh. He wasn't very popular politically.
Politically, he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But in the school there, and I should imagine in that area, he was a very popular chap because he was a down-to-earth kind of chap.
Mm-hmm.
He was a homely man.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I could see, I know that he had his silver wedding anniversary while we were at the school, while we were teaching there in the afternoons. This was in 1956, something like that.
And do you remember the period during which you taught there?
I taught for a whole year at his school.
Oh, only for 1 year?
For 1 year, and then that whole school was... The afternoon classes were transferred to this woman's estate, preparatory. That's why I say we went for the first morning. I can't remember the year that the school was started. I've got pictures of this school where we were, the sort of pioneers of the school, all of us standing there as a group.
So was it in the 50s?
This was in the 50s, yes.
Did they still have those pantomimes?
Oh, yes, I was involved in one of the pantomimes. I think it was it Ali Baba in the 40s or something like that it was there?
Oh, you were a teacher then?
I was a teacher there in the afternoon sessions, you know. And we went to the city hall and there was this pantomime.
It was always a very flashy and grand
occasion.
But
it was a very grand occasion and it was very well done. Very well done. We sewed all the costumes, you know, some of us were responsible for making these costumes for this group, and that those teachers were again involved in making the costumes of that. We did all the costumes. I know that I was involved in making the costumes for some of the what it is. I was in charge of a band of boys, quite big boys, to get them, who wasn't on stage all the time, but you had to look after them to get them on stage at the right moment. And they were just these teenage boys who were just busy looking around, you know, quite difficult to manage. And Miss Trim was very impressed because, you know, we're all sitting behind the screen there in the back like a big choir. And I said to her, why, there's only two entrances to this place. Here the kids can get in, and here they've got to come out. Why don't we just sit here and prevent them from coming out? Then they've got to be quiet. And we did that, and it worked perfectly, you know. So she was very impressed. She insisted that I was coming to teach at her school. So myself and Harold, I've forgotten Harold's surname, and another teacher, three of us, we walked the kids from Golding School right along there, right past Sonnenblum Primary, right past the secondary stroke teacher training college, right up to Warner State. And we were there at that school.
Do you remember which standards you taught?
Oh, I taught beginners. Sub A.
Is that why you went to the preparatory as well?
Yes. And I taught sub A.
And where did you get?
And through the Afrikaans medium.
Oh, you taught through the Afrikaans
medium? I taught through the Afrikaans medium.
And where did you get your training?
At Sonnenblum.
Was it before the war or after the war?
No, it was during the war.
It was during the war?
43 to 47.
Do you have memories of your days at Sonnenblum as a student?
I was a hostel girl, you know. I lived in the hostel.
Because you came from the countryside?
Came from the countryside. Came from Robertson, and so my father stuck me in there. And that is why I say that everything was English at that time in Cape Town. You hardly ever heard any Afrikaans. If you did, it wasn't the... It was sort of the mixture, you know, the kind of...
It wasn't the respectable language.
No, it wasn't the pure Afrikaans that we had. And so that when school kids came to school, then you had a problem in teaching them what we call Saber Afrikaans.
Oh, was Afrikaans a major subject for you?
Not really. I never liked Afrikaans as a subject at school, if you can get me. Because, you know, here I was... all my life, I spent my whole teaching, all my schooling was done through the Afrikaans medium until I came to college. And then I had to switch over to English. And it was difficult. Now, difficult because you're slower. And you're slow in taking down notes. So, because the teacher is going fairly fast. And so therefore, because sometimes you have to thinking about the spelling and so on, and so you got left behind and so forth, and you had to make it up afterwards. And when we were in the hostel, the matron, who was English, an old maid, Miss Hutchinson, I remember her very well. She used to give us black marks if we spoke. If we were caught speaking in Afrikaans, we were given... black marks.
And was hostel life very austere?
No, we had great fun. We weren't allowed up much, you know. We weren't allowed up much. The people who just started, all those in Standard 7, we weren't allowed up. We were allowed up once a month on a Sunday from 10 to 6 o'clock. And once a month, the first Saturday of the month, to go and do your shopping. So you were just out early morning. But we used to have great fun, either by refusing to eat the food or by crying all night, you know, giving the assistant matronly, Ida, because she used to sleep up at the top with us in a small room. And we used to cry, and then when she comes out, then she doesn't know which one it was, and so on.
That was great fun.
Great fun, yes. Yeah. Or when we used to go in the backyard and climb over the fence, into the trees there, and over the fence to go to what we call the back shop. And the back shop there, we would buy peanuts, which were quite a fair-sized bag for threepence to sixpence, or fish or something like that.
And come back. And the teachers at Zonnebloem, were they white teachers? Or
at that time, it was just when some were black, you know. I don't know if you remember a chap called Peter Sir.
Peter Sir, no.
He was really dark. Ancient Rooster originally. He came there, he was teaching PT. Then there was one called Peterson. I never knew whether he was white or whether he was coloured.
What did he teach?
I can't remember.
He's
I didn't
poet.
Have him as a teacher.
Oh.
Then there was Buddy Murray. I don't know if you remember him. Buddy Murray, he was married to a girl, somebody called, was it Ruth Pinal? Can't remember what his wife's name was. But I know her surname was Pinal, because Kenneth was married to the younger sister, called Veronica. That was his first wife. Pinot. But Buddy Murray was married to an older sister, and he was my history teacher, and I used to hate him. I never liked history because I always felt he was a rotten teacher, you know. And Mr. de Villiers was our Afrikaans teacher. He was brilliant in Afrikaans.
White teacher, Afrikaans speaking.
He was a brilliant in the spoken language, but he was terrible as a teacher. He'd come sit and he always, and very vain, always be fiddling with his hair, which was just graying, and tidying it. Our English teacher was a marvelous woman. She was English. She came to South Africa with her family, her mother, her father, and a fiancé. And rumor has it that they were involved in an accident. The other three were killed, and she was the only one surviving. And so she didn't go back to Britain, she stayed in South Africa. She refused, in all the years that she lived in South Africa, she never spoke a word of Afrikaans. She refused to speak Afrikaans, but she was an excellent teacher. I'm just sorry that I never had her as a history teacher.
So you left Zonnebloem in 47?
47.
During the war, were there any particular incidents you recall of that period?
No, there was nothing really, you know,
significant
about that period, except that, of course, there were blackouts. And we used to go to the little theatre, and it used to be great fun because it's blackout, and we used to pretend all sorts of things and make life difficult for the person who was taking us. That's all. It was great fun to us. Absolutely all.
And then what happened after the Zonnebloem College? Where did you go to then?
I went home, and my parents decided that I wasn't going to teach straight away.
Was it Robertson?
Robertson, yes. I wasn't going to teach that away, but a friend of theirs, old friend of theirs, Mr. Willis Langer, he came there and he insisted that I come and teach in George. So I went down to teach in George. That's when I started my teaching career.
And how long did you stay in George?
I stayed there till, when was it, 47, 40. I taught there only for 18 months, and I got ill when my parents came to fetch me. And I decided that I was now really not going to teach. I was going to recover, and then I would start teaching.
What was wrong with him?
I just got ill.
And then you came to...
Then I came home.
And when did you come back to Cape Town?
To Cape Town when I got married.
When was that?
1953. 7th of November 1953.
And how did you meet your husband?
My husband, I met him through his brother. I came up to Cape Town. His family came down to Robertson, incidentally, for a weekend. And they all met us down there. And I was a friend of the girl where they stayed. And so I had to go down and help entertain these people from Cape Town. You know what the country places are like. Okay, I'll help you down. So we were dancing and singing there in the evening. And then when I went up to Cape Town, they insisted that I go with them to a picnic. I can't remember which seaside resort it was, and Kenneth was there as well. And I was the only girl who could play rugby, you know, because in a small town like Robertson, all you do on Saturday is you either play tennis, or in the rugby season you go and watch rugby every Saturday in the winter time. And I knew all about rugby. Then I played with him. So he saw that I knew how to play rugby. And the next thing was, he said, well, would you like me to teach you to swim? So I said, yes, all right. So he came to fetch me and we went to Trafalgar Baths. But I never learned to swim.
Oh, I see.
But he took me to Trafalgar Baths. And he tried to teach me that day. But unfortunately, I only knew one stroke. And that was to sink. And then things developed from there.
What was he doing at the time?
He was teaching at Livingston, I think. He was teaching at Livingston all the years. You know, in 48, or was it 47? I went to teach in 47, right? I was teaching in George, and he also started teaching that year. But he was in Oatsall.
What was your surname before you became...
Scholtz.
You were Scholtz. And your parents, just as an aside, what were they doing in Robertson? What kind of...
My mother was never worked in her life. She was just a housewife and a mother. And my father was a teacher.
Oh, your father was a teacher.
He was the principal of the Methodist school.
So you got married on the 7th of...
November.
Did you then... Were you then aware of Kenneth's political...
Yes, I knew he activity. Was in a member. That time he was... in the Forum Club, eh? The Forum Club was the sort of, I think it was the breakaway from the Unity Movement or something like that, or words to that effect. I'm not quite sure about that. But I knew he was just a member of the Forum Club with Tippy Davis. Do you remember him? Dr. Davis? Arthur Davis? Brother of the chap who had the robot cafe. Which used to be the Roadmap Cafe, which is now a great, big, beautiful shop there on the corner. Lansdowne Road. Is it Lansdowne Road?
Yeah, I heard that name. Arthur Davis has come up, the name.
Arthur Davis, Dr. Arthur Davis. He used to be a teacher, and at the age of 43, he went back to university, became a doctor. And Arthur Davis, I'm trying to think of all the other people. Alice, Hazel, do you know Hazel Abramson? And Herbie Abramson? No, they're also long before your time, I suppose. Must know Cardiff Marnie and Enver Marnie.
Yeah.
Cardiff was a young scholar at that time, I think, in I'm not sure.
So was that a preoccupation of Kenneth in your early years?
Yes, you see, and I didn't quite understand those things. I accepted it, but I didn't understand it quite. You know, you are young, you've got your idea of what married life should be, and he's preoccupied with what his interests are and not worried about, you know, what the wife is wanting and what her aspirations are for the marriage. And he just kept on with his political...
Where did you live when you came to Cape Town and got married?
I first lived with his mom for some time.
Where was that?
Princess Street, you know, where that little DRC church is, right next door to it. That
Woodstock?
No, Princess Street, Claremont.
Oh, in Claremont.
You know, this is Lansdowne Road, and then you fork off like this to go to Rosmead Avenue. I don't know what that little road is called, and Princess Street is here. There's a little church here. Just next door to Livingston High School. The back of the church and the side of Livingston faces each other.
So you must have known Ali Fatah since that time. He was also living...
I didn't know him very well.
Oh.
You know, the first time I met Ali Fatah is when he and Ursula, I don't know if they remember this even. He brought Ursula, I knew of him. You know, I've heard the name a lot. I knew that he was a teacher at Livingston High School. And then he came with Ursula. When Kenneth was arrested with Neville's case, you know. He was arrested and he was in prison. And they came and said to me, look, a chaplain, I can't remember what his name was, will come to you. He will pretend that he's coming to for an interview for press, you know. Don't talk to him. Don't talk to him at all. Just, you know, think of what you're going to say well beforehand and so on. And then that was the first time I saw him properly. Because I went out with Ursula. She came in, but I went out with her to the car. And he brought her up to do this, you know, which I thought was very good. And they were hardly gone when this chap came there. So I was prepared for it. I mean, I was very silly and stupid at that time. Raw. Not quite with what was going on. And not believing in those things. But of course, you know, you can't live with somebody for 35 years and not know something.
So you were still teaching at the time?
I was teaching at the time, yes. I was teaching at Belleville High School.
Oh.
I was teaching needlework, all things. Changing my... Not changing my... But I was teaching needlework. Inspectors. I was at Vasco High School doing needlework, 7 and 8. And then Mr. Bronx, who was the principal of the school, he said, would I like to go with you to Belleville? So I've got a picture of the school, because it was a new school, brand new school. I was the only woman on the staff. So I went with them. So we are the pioneers of the Belleville High School. And I left from that school. He was very, very good. You know, because I had to give something like not a minute's notice, but you know, I gave very little time notice, and he was good, and they wanted to know from him what were my family problems that I had to take off so suddenly, right in the middle of a term. So he said, look, I know this lady very well. If she says she's got a family problem, who am I to interfere in her family problems? If she says she has one, then she has one. Because I left on the day that... I think I left on the... I can't remember. I know I left in October. Ever seen things to happen to me in October, eh? I left in October.
1964.
October. So I arrived in London on Friday, the 13th of November.
No.
So I must have left at the end of October, I think. No, I think I was around about the 21st or something like that, because I think I was at sea for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And did you, do you not recall any meetings at your house? Any discussions?
Oh, yes, political but meetings? You know, I never used to join them.
You used to that only make the coffee?
Well, sort of be in the background. And I never sat in on them, never. Because in those years it was strange. The men did politics and the women were on the fringes. And they only sort of the girls, the unmarried girls, were the ones who sometimes joined
these political
groups.
The wives of the activists and the thinkers didn't get together, or they weren't... who were your friends at the time? Your
at
close
the
friends?
Time, you see, that is what is... I had a very close relationship with my mother-in-law. And most of my time, free time, was spent with my mother-in-law.
Oh, because you lived with...
No, because I lived in the same road as she did. They lived at the bottom end of Princess Street and I lived at the top. But we had something in common. We liked playing cards and we used to go to cinema together and so on. So most of my time was spent with her.
And Kenneth's pastimes, leisurely activities, what did you do?
Wow, you lived it up, man. It was he was really... you know, when I started going with Kenneth to political meetings and so on, was in London. We just arrived in London, it was cold, it was miserable, and everywhere we went,